would you call yourself a socialist?
No.
You've never told a lie in politics?
No.
See, somebody sent me a video actually last Friday and it had you talking at the socialist community.
Yes.
And you mentioned the word comrade about four times in a minute. What was that about?
It was a rally and I would have been about 25 years old.
Comrade.
That was in 2009.
Oh, well, I can't remember which country it was in.
Has it changed since those days?
No, not particularly. No.
If you are caught in a lie or caught intentionally misleading the New Zealand public, how would you expect to be held to account?
Well, I actually believe that it is possible to exist in politics without lying.
We drum in that messaging around the dangers of COVID pretty diligently for a full 2-week period of sustained propaganda.
Do you want this wolf in sheep's clothing? It's not really comedy. It's just from a Soviet Union textbook, English textbook, about the basically the communist wolf in sheep's clothing strategy.
Jacinda Ardern.
It's wacky to find it in a Soviet Union English textbook in 1950. I had this recording studio once and we did it up like a sort of gentleman's club on acid, and we had bookshelves that people walked through. So it was a burglar's nightmare because everything was, I had to stock it with these old books, you see. So I found this old book and it had in it the wolf in sheep's clothing. Lesson 15, The Wolf in Sheep's Clothing, a Fable. A wolf once saw some sheep feeding at the bottom of a hill. Wanting to eat some of them, he thought of a plan. He put on the skin of a sheep, and in this way, going in among the sheep, he was able to kill many of them. The shepherd did not recognize his enemy because he had put on the skin of a sheep and looked like a sheep. Why do so many of my sheep disappear? He asked himself. As he had never lost any sheep before, he was very angry. I'll catch the thief, he said. I shall get a thick rope and hang him. But still, one by one, the sheep continued to disappear. When at last more than 10 sheep had disappeared, the shepherd became really watchful. He walked about among the sheep night and day and watched carefully. One night he saw a sheep which did not move and eat grass like a sheep. That is not a sheep, he said. That's a wolf in sheep's clothing. That is the enemy who has killed my sheep. Taking the rope, which he had brought with him, he quickly threw it around the wolf's neck. Then he took him to a tree that grew at the top of the hill and hanged him. Two other shepherds were passing the place at that time, and they were very much surprised to see a sheep hanging from a tree at the top of the hill. What does that mean, brother? Asked one of the men in surprise. Is it possible that you hang sheep? No, answered the shepherd, but I hang wolves when I catch them, even if they are dressed in sheep's clothing. When the two men understood their mistake and saw what the shepherd had said was true, they said, "You are quite right, brother. The most dangerous enemies are those who pretend to be friends." So that is the story of the wolf in sheep's clothing, which is the logo, funnily enough, of the Fabian Society from 1884, the year after Karl Marx died. The Fabian Society advertised themselves as effectively the big bad wolf in sheep's clothing. That is, what kind of people do that? And they've been doing that ever since. They've been dressing up as sheep when they are, in fact, wolves. Who does that remind us of? And that brings us back to that person that you played before, Grant. The one who was so kind. Are we getting it? Yes.
Killing us with kindness.
Killing us with kindness. So she needs a dose of the treatment that, and of course I would not wish to incite violence at any stage, except possibly after the arrest and the trial.
Yes.
Yes. And even then, I would not wish to see the Prime Minister hanged, because no, I believe that the appropriate punishment is a lethal injection, should she be found guilty, which, of course, she would be. But perish the thought that I should be considered a violent man for something as rational as that.
That's absolutely right. We don't let them go, do they? People. That's what I liked about what you asked that McNulty fellow. Kieran, what should the punishment be for genocide? Is that what you said?
Yes, yes, more or less.
Have you considered that living with the guilt of what you've done Ooh. Might be a more appropriate punishment? Assuming that she does have a conscience, which is not proven that she doesn't, and if you look at her condition, you could argue that she's highly stressed by the situation.
She doesn't look well.
Sociopathic necessarily.
Well, I liken her to Hitler, and I would not think that Hitler should be let off with a long prison sentence. I don't think she's anything worse. She's different from Hitler because he only killed 6 million. Her guys, her team are wanting to kill 7 billion. So in that sense, she's on a different scale from Hitler, but it's not a good scale. I don't really care.
I have to beg to disagree to a certain amount.
A differ bigger.
I just think that we should do unto others as we would have done unto us.
I'd expect to be hung.
Not unto others what they have done to us.
But Dan, my point is not that it actually happens. My point in saying this is more of the threat. It's more of this is how serious this is. You guys have got to realize now that you are entering into territory where you could die. I don't much care if they do or not, but they need to feel the fear. That's what I'm talking about.
A deterrent.
Right, I understand that. But I think in order, from my perspective, for Nuremberg to work, we have to come together to figure this situation out. Now, when you talk about murdering the Prime Minister and it's genocide...
I'm not talking about murdering the Prime Minister.
No, well, saying...
I'm talking only about executing the Prime Minister for what she's doing. But I'm really talking about threatening her to the extent where she stops. If those people realise that they are up on capital charges, or should be... that should have a sobering effect. It may not, but that's really the strategy. The actual event.
This is how I see it with Nuremberg. I just can only say what my point of view is. I think it's a difficult situation for everyone, including the Prime Minister, including Ashley. I think we need to find a resolution, a way out where perhaps a little bit of extra data comes out. The myocarditis is a bit worse, and we need to leave a little bit of wriggle room because, the last thing we want is for this thing to go to. So obviously the plan is marginalize these anti-vaxxers, the smaller minority. You know, we know the script, right? But the one way to beat it, and this is the way I think it should be done, is we come together around this idea that whether you're vaxxed or unvaxxed, you can tell there's something very strange about this whole situation, right? The number one, that 12,000 comments, the number one most voted comment was exactly that, Alicia Lang. So what she said, and people can come together around these sorts of ideas, that there's something strange going on, doesn't matter if you're vaxxed or unvaxxed. And so let's just say, for example, that they made an error, right? And obviously there's a lot of damage by this error, but You know, like, I mean, listening to Ashley, for example, when that man was shot and he was asked, well, why are you saying a shot person is a COVID death? And he's saying, well, I don't make up the rules. We follow the World Health Organization guidelines, right? And so if we look right to the top and we look at the World Health Organization, now I don't know if you gentlemen and ladies know anything about this latest one, but I've put it up on Nuremberg. And it is, Nuremberg, UK is underway, compliant with international criminal, complaint filed with the International Criminal Court. Okay, and it's got Michael Yeardon, I believe, and yes, a young lady who, I think it's Alana Rose, who filed it. Now, I'm not even sure if this is authentic. It appears to be authentic. It appears as though they have a response from the International Criminal Court, and there's 46 pages. It looks well written. I haven't read it all, and I'm not a lawyer, so I wouldn't know how legitimate it is, but it appears to be the real thing, and it's headed by, Dr. Mike Yeardon.
Yeardon. Mm.
Yeah.
And he was a former Pfizer vice president for, I think, 16 years, Mike Yeardon.
Yeah. So this is very top level stuff. This is like Jacinda and Ashley are right. They're just kind of, they are pawns in a bigger chessboard, if that makes sense.
If I could just jump in here because my phone's going to die, or else I'd just carry on. But they know they're not pawns. These people are complicit, and I have sent them multiple emails from very early on with studies from around the world that said the infection fatality rate for COVID is minuscule. They ignored them, and they've sent me Official Information Act, I sent OIAs to them, and their responses are absolutely and utterly absurd. They know full well what's happening. And when I questioned Jacinda Ardern, that was one of my questions. What's the infection fatality rate? Why are you pushing these vaccines on people when you know they're failing in Israel and the UK? They know full well what they're doing. And my saying is that kindness in the face of wickedness is not virtuous. It's evil. And these people are evil. So they must answer for their crimes in some fashion at some point, legally, before the people or a court. So I'm not giving them an escape hatch because this is a global situation. And if everyone's following the World Health Organization, which is part of the United Nations, no one elected them to do that. We elected Jacinda Ardern. I didn't elect Ashley Bloomfield either. So this country, if you believe how it is, voted for these people, and that therefore they are accountable. They have to be, because that's our system. If not, then we don't have a system.
I think the big danger is us being too nice, us being forgiving, us being gentle on them, and them knowing that they can get away with it because everyone's so weak. I think that is the most dangerous thing in New Zealand at the moment. You know what they're going to do, that you know what they stand for, you know what their ideology is. The problem is the right of politics, if you like, which doesn't exist because they've all cuddled up with the left. And the right represents freedom. It's meant to anyway. And it doesn't exist. And because everyone's being so nice, and we kind of deserve to die, because next year is going to be the most horrific year in human history. And people aren't prepared to believe it, because they're determined to look at the world through the eyes of a decent person. As Sev Zelenko says, you're looking at the world through the eyes of a decent person. And you can't do that when you've got communist murderers on the other side. You can't do that. You've got to look at it like they look at it. They're evil. Everything they do and everything they say backs that up. And if we can't see that, you know, we are all dead. That's how I see it. You know, this requires a very strong, dare I say it, masculine response. They have to step up. The men have to step up at times like this and be men and stop being wussy about it, because that's what we're being at the moment, and that's why we're going to die. And our children are going to die. If we put up wussiness against communist, or whatever you call it, globalist, communist, technocracy, whatever, fascist. It doesn't matter about the word. They're evil. If you put up softness against evil, then you die.
Can I just put in that even at the level that we're talking now, okay, because we can't get to talk to them at the top, yeah, and they were complicit and they have been, and we've got the proof that they are, that they have known exactly what they're doing all along. However, they have put the gun into the hands of CEOs, actually. It's the banality of evil. They put the means to coerce people into being injected into the hands of CEOs, not even into the hands, not into the hands of the police, not into the hands of anybody else, but the hands of people like WorkSafe officers who go to businesses and say, if you don't tell people that they should be vaxxed, then you're going to get fines, right? Or they don't say tell them to be vaxxed. They say if you employ people, affected people, then you're going to get big fines, right? Now, it may sound quite an innocent thing to be doing, but in actual fact, they are the deliverers of all of this. And so when I go into talk to a boss who has got that decision to make about whether they're going to say, well, we're going to drop the mandate or we're going to keep on with it, although they don't seem to come to that conclusion too readily, I always tell them that actually under the Health and Safety at Work Act, if any of the people that they've coerced or encouraged even to be vaccinated because they're too afraid to lose their jobs, then they can be jailed for 5 years. And if anybody dies, they can be fined up to $3 million. So this is, and the thing is that I believe if we can pull it down at the level of the actual perpetrators, which are the CEOs and the good old managers and the HR hags, etc., if we can pull it down there, then we can get our hands on the throats of people like Jacinda Ardern and the rest of them, because they haven't got anything that they can threaten us with once the mandates are gone. So that's my game plan.
I've got a specific case, Liz, that I was trying for a long time to impress upon a 19-year-old staff member at my local pub, one of the bar people. She wasn't going to get vaxxed, and I was pouring information into her, you know, hoping that it would get through. But in the end, she wilted. She was told she had to get vaxxed to keep her job. I got a messenger message at 6:30 yesterday morning or the day before to wish me a happy Christmas, Merry Christmas. Oh, and by the way, I crashed my car last night, and I'm in hospital with two fractured vertebrae. Now, this is a girl who would drive 2 hours after work finished around about 10 to a sick mother in another town. And she did that, you know, quite regularly. It's quite a normal thing for her to do. But after being jabbed, she didn't make it up the road to home without crashing and writing off her car. Now, I'm not sure yet. I haven't had the conversation. I don't really want to be appearing to gloat, you know what I mean? But I haven't expressed sympathy and all that. She's in terrible – well, she's in a lot of pain, sore, very sore. Her mother, funnily enough, has driven 2 hours to be with her now. But I don't know yet that it was vax-related, but it's just another thing. You know, we've just buried a guy in town who just had a brain aneurysm, very healthy. I don't know that was vax-related, but you're just kind of –
Well, I think there's too many coincidences, John. I mean, I'm talking to people all of the time. Now it's back-to-back calls with people organising them to put in Section 83s to withdraw themselves out of the workforce and at the same time to put this on the plate of these CEOs and say, you are liable for these things and you are going to be punished, whether it be with money or with jail time, and to try and stop them. However, in the process, I'm hearing the stories all of the time, the accidents at work, the people who are sick at home, the people who've been jabbed, the people who've now got heart failure, and young people. And yesterday, I was waiting to have a Zoom call with a placemaker's manager and the client and somebody else from placemakers, and the guy called me about. The client called me about an hour beforehand and said, oh, God, he said, this man's a young man, 42. He's a really nice guy. He didn't really want to do it. He was trying to, do everything to stop, losing my job and that. He said, but he's just called me up and said, we'll have to cancel the call because I'm really, really sick. I've got to get to A&E. I'm really, really sick. Wow. And I don't know what's happened to the guy, but it could be that he's deceased by now. Young man, 42, with children, and I just cannot, I cannot. This is evil, Daniel. This is evil.
Yes, Liz, this is why I've created Nuremberg. How it works is that every single business address is already there in the system. Anyone can go to Nuremberg, log in. So, John, going back to the example of this young lady, so if she knew about Nuremberg and she knew how to use it, she could go there, she logs in with Google, it takes about 6 or 7 seconds. Then she goes to provision an email address, say her name's Jessica, she becomes Jessica at Nuremberg, Jessica Smith, say, at Nuremberg. Then she puts in her employer's email address or puts in the template that she wants to use. So, Liz, if you had uploaded that template, and I know there's probably different templates for different sectors of the economy or what have you, depending on their rules, but this is the idea. She could go and grab that template, and in that moment, she gets the power of Dan's, IT skills. She gets the power of Liz's legal knowledge, right? And she becomes empowered to speak to her employer in the correct way. And this is a huge thing because actually at the moment the government backs up the employer, right? And together with that partnership, the employee feels very small. But with the Nuremberg system, which is, I think it's up there. It's probably not quite as amazing as your legal work.
I think it's a damn good combination, Daniel. I'm listening, and I'm thinking
Good. Because this is what it's about. It's like if we had that facility there and anyone in any sector feeling pressured, all they need is that Nuremberg link and they're away, right? And they get there and they're like, see Liz's template, and they log in and they push the button. And then so how it works is all of the emails go into kind of one inbox, if you like. Like they're all separated on the mail server, but then I've got a little routine that goes through all the mailboxes and reads them all into the Nuremberg system. And then the idea is, Liz, you can handle multiple replies. So say you've got an email template based on what happens if there's vaccine injuries. Maybe that's template 179 or 180 it would be if you did it right now. And then we can go through and look at all the replies to email template 180, right? And you can order them. And then so this is where the next trick I was thinking is, and this is probably going too far, but anyway, so each email gets an ID, and then that becomes a linkable, like a Freedom of Information Act, right? Becomes a linkable letter or email, and then people can actually go and vote on it, just like they vote on whether Jacinda should be on the accused list. They can comment on it. So say we get a comment from Dr. Ashley Bloomfield, and the crowd's not happy about it, we can put that out to our social media groups. We can say, hey, people, what do you think about this? Do you think this is right? And so it's this idea of building a narrative and actually showing Ashley Bloomfield and Jacinda Ardern that what they're doing is not democratic. Now, I know in itself that doesn't necessarily solve the problem, but what it does is it builds this cohesive feeling amongst the people who are commenting and voting, which is, hey, we've got this. We've got the narrative here. So that's kind of the next level where it really, so in mass, Liz, you can look at these emails and go, yep, template 180, they've just got it. I can see what they've done. They've gone to the ministry and the ministry's told them to say this. So we're getting generic emails coming back now. And so what it does is it lets you, because the whole government people interaction is like a giant immune system thing, and they've got their immune system warriors, like they've got their misinformation officers, and their, you know, they're trying to figure out how do we handle this. But like, I think it's an easy win because we've got what's good and honest and truthful and decent on our side. So I think this should be an easy win. Personally,
I will make use of it over these next few days, Daniel, to get myself familiar. That's for sure. Like I've just run out of time this last few days, and I keep thinking about it and thinking, let's do it. We'll do it.
So Dan, on a Zoom call last night, I was on with some Maori people, and one of them was a lawyer, and she was saying, you know, she's been to see it, see Nuremberg, but she's saying, well, you know, we're not a signatory to the Nuremberg Code. And I was saying to her, well, yeah, but it's like, if they use that excuse, it's like saying we're not a signatory to humanity. But legally, you're not able to say you will be punished under the Nuremberg Code because New Zealand is not a signatory. It has a other effect, though, doesn't it? Well, maybe you could express it
before you do, Dan. One of the people listening says we are a signatory.
Oh, we are. Well, I was told.
Yes. Just give me a moment, and I'll look that up because I've got it. I've got it in the system here somewhere.
Right, we've got Dan Suter with Nuremberg.nz, John Ansell, former advertising man, lawyer from Auckland, Liz Lambert, and we had Shane Chafin as a board-certified pharmacist. And we also have Jaspreet Boparai, and she's a Southland farmer and also a member of Voices for Freedom in the Southland District. So we'll be back in just a moment.
This is a COVID-1984 announcement. But first, a message from our dear leader.
To be really clear, we are not making vaccination compulsory. It is not compulsory to be vaccinated. But of course, we want everyone to be safe. We want you to be safe. And we want your loved ones to be safe and well. And so we're absolutely encouraging as many New Zealanders as possible to be vaccinated.
The important people at Parliament are hard at work creating new laws and orders that will ensure that no MP, minister, highly placed government official, or think tank advisor who suck off the taxpayers' teat will be forced to take the jab. But for you stinking masses who work in any of these honourable professions and trades, it's no jab, no job for you. And soon, you'll need your vaccine passport to eat, drink, buy or sell. This kind government will never force you to take the jab, so you are always free to choose to be a serf or a slave. Be brave. Do not comply.
We've got Dan Suter from Nuremberg.nz. Hi, Dan. So tell us what you've got there.
Hi, Richard. Basically we've got James Boone back in 28th of April. Did a Freedom of Information Act as to the legal status of the Nuremberg Code, where he writes, I am requesting that you provide to me the current legal status of the Nuremberg Code in New Zealand under current New Zealand legislation. And so the response was, I am advised, this is from the Ministry of Justice, by the way, I am advised by the Ministry of Health that the Nuremberg Code has no status in New Zealand legislation. I am therefore refusing your request under Section 18E of the Act, as the information requested does not exist. So that's the first part. And then the second part is that down on the bottom, a lady called Erin, who should take credit for this because she pointed it out to me. So Bob left an annotation December 11th, 2021, which is not long ago. The Nuremberg Code in 1949 was developed out of the trials of Nazi war criminals, including those involved in medical experiments. the Nuremberg Code was adopted by the United Nations General Assembly and is considered international common law. As New Zealand is a member of the UN, I would suggest the Ministry of Justice is quite probably in error in the assertion of no legal standing. Or has NZ ceased to be a member of the United Nations and it was not publicised?
Brilliant.
So that's, yeah, that's where we're up to, I think.
Yeah. So the Ministry of Health are obviously trying to override the other department, Ministry of Justice.
What confuses me is why the Ministry of Justice would defer. Sorry, Liz.
Those questions are answered by a group called the COVID-19 team or something, right? So they can actually put the question to whomever they want. So they probably didn't put it to the Ministry of Justice. They probably put it to the Ministry of Health because that's who's pulling the strings up there. But the other thing is that international common law is kind of like natural law, if you like. Okay, it's a thing which overrides everything else, and you know is the basis of all law. But these treaties, etc., and signing on to conventions and treaties is a state function. It's not. Common law is about you and me and our rights as people to, you know, live, love and pursue happiness. But these treaties are more to do with, you know, who's in power at the time. Treaties have been signed with between people who stayed enemies or became friends, or and they're just treaties signed. I mean, look at we've got a treaty that was signed by Jacinda with China and others. Has that got, you know, what sort of status has that got? Because it was signed to take away our sovereignty, actually, because and the same with TPP. That's the same thing about what people are talking about. Oh, but, you know, Pfizer signed this treaty, contract with the government. If something is a treaty, or even though it might sound really good, if it's signed for evil means, then it doesn't really have any status of law in the end, right? So, but the common law, the natural law, that can never be done away with, and so. You know, if a piece of legislation like the COVID-19 response, Public Health Response Act, is used for evil ends, that it'll be regarded in the same way as the sorts of laws that the Nazis put into place from 1933 to 1939 and on into during the war, you know, when they had all sorts of laws to take people to separate them from their families and ship them off, you know, take them off in trains and make them work for nothing and inject them, et cetera, that was all done under so-called law. However, in the end, the truth always wins and good always wins, so.
I think the emotive
used this way is okay. The emotional charge that is with the word Nuremberg is very good, yes. Very good. So it doesn't matter if we're signed on or not. We do know that Nuremberg signified the defeat of evil by good. So that's the importance of using.
It seems to me that Nuremberg is convened after a war. It's not. It seems to me, with my limited understanding, that you can't just report them and expect there to be a trial under the current law. It's a special thing that's set up after a world war. And it would be called. It may well be called Nuremberg too. But or am I wrong? I just can't seem to get much clarity on this.
There are now these days treason trials are usually called crimes against humanity trials, right? So what she has done, because she's not the usual mass murderer, she has actually done it in the form of the state. So she would be tried as...
State-sanctioned.
State-sanctioned. And because she's got the power to, she doesn't sign the law, actually. It's the Governor-General. So she's another one that needs to be tried
Mother for Cindy.
Against humanity as well. But they're called crimes against humanity. I've got a book by a man called Jeffrey Robertson QC, and he's actually been counsel in a lot of the crimes against humanity that have been in modern history. Well, we've got Salman, he defended Salman Rushdie, and he acted for terrorist suspects at the Old Bailey, and for the Human Rights Watch proceedings. Let's see. Who else was tried? What's his name? There's actually been Saddam Hussein. He was hung.
Milosevic?
Milosevic. Yeah. So there has been quite a lot of, there has been quite a few human rights crimes against humanity trials that have come out of war situations, or that are, you know, we can see them clearly as war situations, where it's kind of hard for people at the moment to understand that we're in war, because it doesn't have its usual trappings, but it will be not an impossible and probably quite a simple case to make. Once, you know, we have to have the evidence. It's not just feeling, but there is a lot of actual physical evidence and written evidence that they have been very careless about, actually, because they always thought that they were going to win this one.
I think Jaspreet would like to reply. You there, Jaspreet?
Yes, I had some trouble with my microphone.
Yeah, look, I shut you up because I could hear this feedback. Did you want to comment? Because I felt you did.
We were saying that, you know, Ashley Bloomfield and Jacinda, they don't make rules, but to some extent, I believe they do. Like this lady in Taranaki, whose exemption application has just been rejected last week. Now, she was someone who had suffered two rounds of anaphylaxis. She is the carer to two special needs children. Her GP in Stratford recommended an exemption and sent it to Bloomfield's office, since, you know, we have a single source of exemptions. And it came back saying that he's not convinced. We have reached the stage where someone has gone through two life-threatening episodes after this vaccination, so-called vaccination, and yet there is no outrage, there's no uproar. As John was saying, we need to realize we are dealing with criminals on the other side. And I wonder how the GP who recommended this looks at it. You know, what is going to be their wake-up call for the medical profession?
Was that the woman with various children, also in precarious situations, somebody called Gemma or something like that? Is that the same one?
Yeah.
She was in an absolutely horrific situation, and she couldn't get an exemption. Good Lord. I mean, that is evil. That is nothing else.
There's no way anyone can go along with this and say in any realm of imagination this is remotely makes any sense. This is criminal.
The donkey deep in it, Dan. They are. They have to be held accountable. It's and like we have to start talking about how we're going to deal with them once the trials are over. Where is the line?
Does this lady have to die? Mm-hmm. Does she need to suffer lasting brain damage? Get into a lifelong coma that she never
she's
wakes
saying up? That, have you got that thing in front of you, Jaspreet? I mean, it's just heartrending, this, what she's saying. She says, I may die. I may die. She's got these little children. And I just can't remember the details, but she is in serious trouble.
Allergic
to sucrose. Wants her to have another shot that's likely to kill her.
She's allergic to sucrose, the sucrose solution, the sugar solution, which is also in the shots to some extent. And she had anaphylaxis, 2 rounds of it. And her GP recommended it in no uncertain terms to Bloomfield's office. The reply is brief.
He recommended the exemption.
Yeah, her GP
this
has
is a GP that sees her, has taken her case, deals with her on a daily or weekly basis.
Yeah.
Then he sends his recommendation to Bloomfield, hasn't seen a patient for 25 years.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, no.
And this is a lady I don't know, but there's someone I know in Invercargill. This lady was a teacher, and she spoke up at one of our meetings. Now, she wanted the vaccination. She was very upfront about it, that she was petrified, and she was among the first to line up in August for schools. And the first shot, within the 20 minutes of waiting there, she started feeling not too great. And they told her that, you know, we'd rather you go in an ambulance back home rather than drive yourself. Over the next 3 days, started feeling weakness on one side of her body, lack of coordination. And she said, because I remember listening to her in September, and she said in that month and a half, she had already had 3 rides in an ambulance to the hospital. And the last time, she said, at this point at the meeting, she had only been to the ER about 3 days back. And she said at that point, I spoke to the attending physician there at the ER, and she said, I'm now due for my second jab. What should I do? She said, he didn't say anything. And she said, right. She said, I'm going to word this differently. She says, what will happen if I take another jab? And she said, he looked around and he just silently mouthed the words, you will die. But she doesn't get an exemption.
That's what they said to the 14-year-old granddaughter of my neighbor. They said, if she has another shot, this is in the hospital at Whangarei Hospital, if she has another shot, she'll die. And then the heads came down and said, oh, no, she must have some other sort of pre-existing condition. It's got nothing to do with the vaccine.
Yeah. Oh, they're murderers, all right.
Mm. Yeah, there's no two ways about it.
Yeah. Daniel T has just written in. He said, good show, on the road to Palmy. I absolutely agree with John and Shane. This government knows exactly what they're doing. And the adverse reactions and deaths are just collateral damage to them. They believe their own bullshit. Mao Zedong once said, half of China may have to die for his utopian vision to be realized. He sent Chinese men into the Korean Peninsula with wooden guns to be mowed down by the American military. The idea was to make Americans ashamed of itself for all the carnage. Oh. So, yeah, just collateral damage.
Collateral
damage. We've got to say, no, you're not doing this. Not on our watch.
And kids have already died. I am sure somewhere money is changing hands or something. I don't know. Because what buys
it doesn't add up, does it?
What buys a parent's silence if your child has passed? Mm. I know nothing would buy mine, but something obviously is. If it's not money, those people are being terrorized, terrified for their lives somehow.
Well, it's very interesting because the case that I know, they wanted to speak out. And now all of a sudden they've changed their mind. So who's got to them? Who's got to the parents of this 14-year-old Whangarei schoolgirl?
And virtually every other one, we're finding it very hard to get evidence of the bribes. We know that they're paying bribes because they've let that information out early on in the process. But now they're not talking. Why not? What has happened? Is it a threat? Is it a more bribe? Is it, you know, have another 500,000 or something? You would imagine that it would be something in that. But you're sure, you would think that one person somewhere would be unaffected. I mean, you would be, Jaspreet, I would be unaffected by any amount of money if they've done
and
that.
That's what makes me think, as a parent, most people have more than one kids. And what makes me think is like no parent would do this for money. It's probably being terrified about something happening to the other child they have, other children they have. That's what my brain as a mom tells me.
Former SAS, Australian SAS colonel, he's a politician now, he doesn't want to be, he says there is a whole bunch of pedophiles. There's a whole bunch of people that are compromised, that are in positions of authority. And that's backed up by Greg Hallett, who wrote the book New Zealand, A Blackmailer's Guide.
Yeah.
So I think it's more than money. I think these people, they encourage people that are compromised, or they compromise them. And I don't know whether they don't want their sexuality out or what they're up to. He just thinks they're just disgraceful human beings.
I believe there's a new term for that. Pedophiles are no longer referred to that. I was doing some UN webinars, and they're called MAP, Minor Attracted Persons. So you're not, so the MAP sexuality, it's now a sexuality.
Yeah.
A minor attracted person. Yeah. It just happens to enjoy drinking their blood or something. Yeah.
John,
It was made clear to me in graphic detail yesterday by someone who I think knows what he's talking about, and I won't be mentioning it here, but it chilled me. Because I've been very, you know, my cognitive dissonance kicks in with this stuff, you know. And I didn't think that people would be doing that. All this adrenochrome and, you know, I won't elaborate. People know. It was described to me in great detail what is done to these kids. And, of course, he might have been making it up. I don't think so. It's just corroborated all over the place. You're dealing with people who do not really qualify as people. It's so horrific that the big lie principle kicks in, the cognitive dissonance kicks in. It's just, and it's brilliant from their point of view. It's a brilliant campaign. all of this is a masterful piece of campaigning, if you like, because they seem to have us everywhere, every which way. They seem to have us.
And then you have these like clubs that, like the doctors have the club. What do they call it? The medical council. And so it seems that the medical council is compromised, and the doctors are fearful of losing their standing within the medical council. And so they go along with stuff that they know is wrong. They know it's not right.
Why should anyone have a monopoly on treating people. Who are ill. Sorry, something wrong here.
I like what Jess Brett said. You, in India, you go into a town, you walk into the police station, and you start practicing. You don't have to answer to any medical counsel.
In fact, I think it's called a PCR, a police clearance report.
A PCR.
Yeah.
A PCR.
Yeah, that's it. As I said, my mom is a teacher, even when she retired after 28 years, she never was registered anywhere. A bachelor in education followed later by a master's in education was what made her a teacher. And that's it. She applied for jobs where she fitted the criteria required in the advertisement. And she never had to mind her P's and Q's unless it was on a bit of politics simply because of what's Dad's position was as an army officer, and as a serving army officer, you report to the president. You're not supposed to have, you know, political views on certain things. So that was pretty much the only thing that she would not speak about openly. Anything else was fair game.
Dan, in fairness to you, I can see where you're coming from. You know, your site is provocative, Nuremberg.nz, and I would think you'd have to be sort of stand back a bit from the line, but I think we can come right up to that line and say these people need to be dealt with, and you know, but I can see where you're coming from as well.
There are so many philosophies, you know, the Christian philosophy. You know, I don't want to be the guy that's talking about these forms of punishment, but I'm just looking at the goal. What is the goal? Is the goal to talk endlessly and let the red steamroller roll over us, or is the goal to actually win? But people of faith would have a different view. People in the Buddhist tradition would have a different view?
Well, I don't know. The Bible says that if you shed man's blood, by man shall your blood be shed.
That's an eye for an eye, isn't it?
That's biblical.
I'm more interested in the threat, in chilling them to the bone about what happens if they continue. That's my strategy. Well, that's make what the Israelis do now.
The Israelis do that. They'll say sometimes, you know, some of the observers, the peace observers, they'll go up there, and you know, the UN peacekeepers, they'll say, "Oh, these Israelis, they just demolish the Palestinians' houses." What they don't realize is that it's not indiscriminate. That they are the, if this was back before they got the wall up, they would say to them, if you come into our cities and towns and blow yourself up, we will find out who you are and we will destroy your parents' house. That's a fairly good deterrent.
That's the only thing you could do. That's the only deterrent that would work.
And it it did work, that and the wall or the fence.
Yeah. That's just smart deterrence.
Yeah.
Seems to me.
I think for a lot of us, we are in New Zealand, we look at the fact that we are rated amongst the least corrupt countries in the world by Transparency International, the most transparent. And for many people, this is too far, I mean, a bridge too far to cross to realize this is happening.
Yeah.
For someone like me, who's been in farming, I mean, we moved here for farming and that's all we've done.
Yeah.
The point, I mean, it was very visible what they were doing right from when we were in the Waikato and you had councils giving out money for riparian planting, and today the councils have maps where the riparian planting were done, and that's an SNA now. In farming, you could see this coming. You could see exactly how they were destroying it. But even then, not that farmers said anything. They just keep rolling along. But for the average townie, it is, I think, too hard to realize how much we've been compromised.
That's very
important. So we say that we're supposed to be on the tables, you know, we're supposed to be one of the least corrupt. I'd say per head of population, from what I've seen over these last 2 years, we would be the most corrupt country in the world per head of population.
Well, no, Vatican City is the most corrupt.
It's a corruption that's, that you can't quite put your finger on, but it's that corruption of turning a blind eye. When it's and it's so close to you, it's so close to you. It's not like we live in huge cities that we hear of 100 murders a day, but you know we wouldn't ever know. We would the chances of knowing anybody would be very slim. These are murders being carried out and maiming being carried out in every small town and every big city in this country. We're supposed to have 2 degrees of separation, and there's still people who turning a blind eye. And I would say we are the most corrupt country in the world per head of population.
I'd have to agree with you. Not until I read Greg Hallett's book, though. I wouldn't have agreed with that. I said, oh, no, Liz, you're overreacting. I certainly think you're underreacting.
I don't know that book, though.
Yeah. New Zealand, A Blackmailer's Guide. I'll loan it to you.
I'll send it to you. Greg Hallett's book,
Yeah, terrible book. And people like the police. The police brought pee into New Zealand. You wouldn't believe some of the stuff. Jeffrey Palmer said, oh, it's terrible. If it was true, it'd be a scandalous book. He's involved in it.
Someone like me, I would absolutely believe it. In India, the heroin trade from across Pakistan is done by the BSF, the Border Trading Border Protection Force, and everyone is involved in it, right from the courier who are smuggled underground under the cover of gunfire. So all of that happens completely with the, you know, cops and everyone, all the security agencies passing it. So it doesn't come as a surprise, but a Kiwi, you know, a born here Kiwi would find that hard to believe.
Yeah.
Maybe we're especially good at being especially bad. You know, we've got Jacinda Ardern, who's hoodwinked a large chunk of the population. She does her badness with a smile. Perhaps that's what we're good at. Perhaps that's our specialty. Because it's a hard call to say that we're the most corrupt country in the world when you think of all the under table payments and bribes at customs and all that you hear about going into other countries.
And the fact that, you know, those countries, you know, sometimes that's necessity.
Thanks very much, everyone, for joining us. Merry Christmas to you all. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Jaspreet. Thank you, Liz and John. It's been great having you. We started off trying to just have a bit of light relief with playing silly music, but we can't. It's just too serious. Yeah. What's happening to our country is too serious to fall around.
Keep up the fight, people.
Couldn't keep it going, could we? All right, so we'll see you next time.
FDA will be adding a warning to two of the COVID vaccines. It comes after a CDC advisory panel found that there is a likely association between the vaccines and a rare heart inflammation in young people.
The heart condition is called myocarditis. It's an inflammation of the heart muscle. The most common cause is a viral infection.
Your heart muscle is not able to pump as efficiently as it does if it doesn't have a viral inflammation.
Now, word that the mRNA vaccines may be associated with more than 1,200 cases of this rare heart inflammation in young people. The problem is more likely after the second shot.
I'd say even if you live alone, I would wear a mask in the house, especially in the shower, because frankly, droplets can make the way through the drain and come up through somebody else's toilet, infecting them with COVID through the anus. Ballpark in 2 to 5 to 20 years, we can start thinking about considering the idea of pondering the thought of conceptualizing the possibility of maybe, perhaps, reopening, but probably not. I would avoid having any fun whatsoever in the near to far future.
How would you like to finally have your say?
Only time will tell where we go to heaven or hell. But I'm going to tell you this. There ain't going to be no COVID that's going to judge the existence of my life or the future of my children, because if you want to get right down to it, I'm going to tell you right now, it ain't nothing but a hoax.
Well, now's your chance. Give Grant Edwards and John Ansell a call on Saturday night after 8 at Liberty NZ here on Podbean.
It's a political ploy so they can keep you at home, cast your votes from mail-in ballot. But yep. I'm not going to yep. let them dictate my future, nor the future of my children. And I have firearms that I'm ready to hunt. I got a fucking itchy finger, and I don't hunt deer.
Join Grant Edwards and John Ansell here at Liberty NZ Podbean. See you then.